We are the Blood and Platelets Podcast. Tales of transplant survivors. Brandon, Alex, and Chrissy, we are genetically modified humans who have come together to tell real stories, real emotions, real experiences, to fill a void for patients, encourage, give hope, and inspire those going through treatment and beyond.
My name's Brandon Ito, and yes, my story begins 19 years ago, at the age of 13.
Let's do a quick math. 19 years.
13 years
plus
old.
Plus 13. How old are you now? 32.
I just turned 33.
Aha! Right. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Young man.
So at 13, you know, I was typical, you know, teenager. I would preteen. Basketball was my life. That's all I wanted to do. I was always the first kid on the playground, last one off.
Were you a little bit taller than the rest of the 13-year-olds?
No, I was still the shortest.
Yeah, but Japanese kid.
Yeah, I wasn't going to be tall no matter what. That's what my life consisted of. I played on a basketball team. We traveled to Sacramento, San Jose, South Bay, all over the place, and I remember playing in a basketball tournament in, I want to say, March, April. Uh-huh. So similar to the time you found out, I was playing basketball, and the next week I ended up with all these bruises, like Alex. I had bruises like on my knee, on my elbow, but I didn't think anything of it.
Mm-hmm. Just from one time, or were you getting this every time you played basketball?
Just this one time, yeah. So I would notice all these bruises, but I thought it was just from the game.
And being 13.
Yeah, and I remember falling a few times during the game. I remember getting hit. So, of course, we just thought that the bruises were just from that.
Physical contact.
Yeah, exactly. So then a few weeks go by, and I started getting fatigued at school. Like I said, I was always the first kid on the playground, last one off. But at school, I was falling asleep and sleeping during PE, like taking naps during lunch.
Oh, wow.
So that wasn't normal, especially for me.
I would have gave you detention.
Well, the teachers even asked like if I was okay, because I was not the one
so
to fall asleep.
Unlike you.
Yeah, especially during like lunch.
Yeah.
There was just, it just wasn't like me. And I remember a couple days go by and I started getting a fever. And so we just thought I was just coming down with the flu or whatever it was. So I stayed home from school, and one of those nights I woke up feeling like I had a really bad sore throat, and I was just trying to cough up phlegm. Mm-hmm. And I woke up to go to the bathroom that night, and I realized what I thought was phlegm was blood. So I had dried blood all over my lips, and being 13, I was just like, just like a sore throat, whatever. So the next morning, I didn't even tell my mom right away.
Wait, even after seeing the blood?
Yeah.
You didn't freak out?
I just thought it was like a really bad, because my throat was hurting. I just thought it was like a really bad sore throat.
Oh my gosh.
So I was just like, oh man, this sore throat, it's not normal, but it's a sore throat. I'll just get over it. So I didn't tell my mom right away, but I eventually told her, I think 2 days after that, cause my fever was still up. So I told her, okay, yeah, I woke up and there was dry blood around my mouth. So she's like, okay, let's go to the ER. So we went to the ER and I told them my symptoms, like my throat's hurting. I woke up and there was, blood around my lips. I was coughing up blood. So they thought it was strep throat.
Oh.
So They gave me antibiotics for that, and that went away. And as soon as that went away, I started to get the petechiae, like Alex. They first showed up on my arms, and I thought it was a rash, so I was throwing like hydrocortisone or cortisone or whatever to make it go away.
I did that.
Yeah, and it didn't go away, obviously. And a few days go by, it spread more to my arms and then to my legs, and then my fever came back. So we thought it was a symptom from the strep throat, or maybe the antibiotics that the doctor gave me. Maybe it was like an allergic reaction. So then we went back to the doctor. And the second time around, they did a blood sample just to make sure that it wasn't anything. But it ended up being something. I remember that night at like 9 o'clock at night, I was watching TV and my mom gets a phone call, and I can tell that something wasn't right just from her voice. I heard like, okay, like we'll be there right away. So she hangs up and she tells me, okay, get some clothes. We're going to go back to the hospital. The doctor needs to see us again. And I was like, dude, it's 9 o'clock. Like what can, he can't tell us like in the morning. But I knew it was serious, but I didn't want to
admit it.
You know, or I try to play it off like it wasn't serious, so I wouldn't have to go back to the hospital.
But you had a feeling that it was something serious.
Well,
yeah,
just,
did you have that feeling?
Just by seeing my mom, I didn't have the feeling. I just knew something wasn't right because of the way my mom.
You knew it was something health related.
Yeah. So we drove down to Whittier Presbyterian, where I guess my physician was at the time. And I didn't find anything out right away, but they told my mom and my dad that it was acute myeloid leukemia like yours. And I didn't actually find out what I had until I was transferred over to CHLA. So I was at Whittier Presbyterian for maybe like 3 hours, just waiting around, no idea what was happening, no idea what was wrong with me. And then all of a sudden they said, okay, we're going to transport you to CHLA now. And
did that register with you?
Still nothing. Oh, like this is serious. Still
nothing.
I think just being 13, just being.
He thought, well, it's a children's hospital, so
yeah,
that's more
appropriate. Yeah. And so I was admitted that night, and the following day I started chemotherapy already. And so the doctor came in, a social worker came in, and they were trying to explain to me what leukemia was, that it was a type of cancer, and I'm going to be receiving treatment called like chemotherapy. And like still I was just like, okay. Like, I didn't know what cancer was at age 13. It wasn't as well-known or prevalent.
Yeah, because this is almost 20 years ago.
Yeah. So, you know, I just thought I was sick. I was going to be in the hospital. 99,
wow.
Yeah. So I thought I was just going to be in the hospital for a couple of days. They were going to give me some medicine, and I'll be good. I think the social worker realized that I didn't know exactly what was going on. Plus, I was, like, super tired. I was up all night, and they were trying to explain all the stuff that was just
going over your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incomprehensible. So, the next day, I remember the social worker sitting down with just me and my mom, and she was explaining everything. And then I knew it was serious when I saw my mom crying. Mm-hmm. It was just like... And so, I saw her crying, and then I started crying.
Of course.
And I still didn't really know what was going on, but
right.
I knew now that it was like, it was bad.
Uh-huh.
And the social worker said that, you know, cancer is something that people die from. And so that's when it kind of was like, oh, okay, that's why my mom's scared. That's why she's crying.
But that's when they said the word cancer.
That's the word that they were using over and over. They kind of dropped the leukemia part, but they were just saying like cancer. Cancer. Cancer people survive from, people don't. They had to give me both sides. They had to tell me, you know, people survive from it, but people also don't. But we need to at least tell you that. And this is the kind of steps that they're going to take. You're going to start chemotherapy. They're going to put a line like in your body, so they don't have to poke you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think I was going through chemotherapy for a month or two before the talks about having a bone marrow transplant was in play.
Mm.
Your chemo was through IV bag, right?
IV, yeah.
Because some people take chemo through pills.
Mm-hmm.
Oral, yeah.
Yeah.
So I took those right before my transplant. I much would rather had the chemo intravenously.
IV.
Yeah.
Why? Well,
those pills were just
disgusting.
Gross. Yeah.
The taste?
So how
it
was, like, you know how they could like put stuff in the capsules?
Uh-huh.
So they did that, and just like the capsules itself were just, yeah, they're like bad tasting.
So you, how many weeks of chemo did you do? Did you say about 4 weeks?
I want to say, I'm trying to think. I was diagnosed in May of 1999, June. So I was actually on chemo for a couple months.
Uh-huh.
Before your transplant?
Mm-hmm. Couple months, and months straight. I didn't get to go home at all during those few months. And then that's when the conversation about finding a bone marrow donor.
Mm-hmm.
And then bone marrow donor, that's another concept I couldn't wrap my head around. Like,
mm-hmm.
what is bone marrow? What,
yeah.
Right.
Like, isn't that just, like, blood,
yeah.
pretty much? I thought blood, I mean, it is, but, like,
right.
I thought it was just blood transfusions, the what I was getting.
Right.
So I was so confused, so they had to explain that to me again. Like, it's the stuff that's inside your bone. Like, that's what produces, you know, all the
factory.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So they said that they need to wipe all that out and put in new one for you to have a better chance of survival. The chemotherapy is doing its job right now, but it may not completely get rid of it, and it can come back anytime, and they didn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
So the hunt for a bone marrow donor started, and groups like A3M, I don't know how they knew. So I was diagnosed in May of 1999, like early May.
Mm-hmm.
And at the Tigers tournament, the basketball tournament was at the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
They already had posters and signs up.
With your picture on it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Getting, like, registering
mm-hmm.
Bone marrow donors. So I clearly remember that, because I remember my friends, like, taking pictures and then coming to the hospital and showing me, like, oh, like, you had a poster outside and people were, like, signing up to, like, do this thing for you, like, give blood or whatever. So that was cool. That, I know that gave my parents a lot of comfort. It made me feel good, even though I still didn't know what was going on.
It's crazy. At that age, your friends and your peers, they can't register to become donors.
No.
They're too young.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't even know if they knew what, you know, they
yeah.
were there for,
at,
or the A3M was there for.
At 13, I didn't even know my left foot from my foot. So,
yeah.
So for you, yeah.
But you had siblings, right?
Siblings. I have two brothers. I have an older brother and a younger brother.
So they tested them immediately.
Right, because they said that a sibling has a higher chance
right.
of matching.
And neither of them were good enough. At
they weren't even close. They
said. Weren't even close.
Yeah.
Wow, interesting.
So, yeah.
Wow.
So, but they said they saw something in both of their blood makeup that maybe my parents, one of my parents, would match.
That's why they.
Yeah, because they said usually they wouldn't even
they
test
wouldn't
the
even,
parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neither of my parents were tested.
Rare chance.
Right.
Yeah, so they tested my brothers. They were nowhere close to matching. Then they tested my dad. He wasn't close. And then lastly, they tested my mom. And crazy, you know, but she was 100% match.
So bizarre.
I know.
We're going to call her the Holy Mary Mother.
Yeah.
Brandon.
I don't think we should go on with, please believe it or not.
100%.
Yeah. And even, I remember I was at home at the time when we received the phone call. I was in my room watching TV. My mom got the phone call and she came in saying that she was a match. And again, like all these things that were happening to, I just like, was like, kind of like no big deal or like, okay, like,
right.
You should match me, right? Because you're my mom. Yeah, like why wouldn't you?
Right.
It wasn't until, you know, like later, when
that
I got older, I realized.
Yeah. The rarity of it and
the amazing
miracle of it.
Yeah, because I was wondering why the doctor said, like, you, like, literally, like, won the lotto.
Yeah.
Because it's that rare. It's rare for a sibling to match. For a parent to 100% match is, like, almost unheard of, they said.
Yeah.
So.
Dude, your mom, like, you know, as traumatic as it is, but she basically gave you life twice.
Yeah. Yep, and I say that to all, like,
that's right.
And when I talk to you, yeah. Like, she gave me life twice.
It's amazing.
I can never say no to her.
Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't say no to your mom, period, but now it's...
Now you really are in debt.
Yeah.
So when did you start the transplant process?
That was early October is when...
Of 1999.
1999.
So all within the same year.
All within the same
year.
You
got diagnosed, so similar to Alex. Mm-hmm. 6 months... window, you start chemo, you get diagnosed, you start chemo, you start transplant process.
Yep.
And back then, this is 20 years ago, so that was a different procedure.
There probably wasn't much of a registry back then, I would imagine, 20 years ago. Like,
I'm sure it was
not as much as what
we had.
I think the only option was a bone marrow transplant. I don't think there was anything
for
other,
stem cell, right?
Yeah, I don't
stem
think there was any other kind
helpful.
Of...
Right.
Because I don't remember hearing any other kind of option. And I think my mom would have said, like, oh, you would have had... There is other options, stem cell or whatever, mm-hmm. but I don't think there was another option. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's crazy in itself that was the only option I had. And the one person to match was someone who shouldn't match me.
Yeah. So this is October then, you start the transplant process.
Yeah, so I was in complete, like, isolation. I was in, so now, like, the nurses, they can, like, walk into your room, they just have, like, gown up. I was in, like, a bubble. There was, like, a plastic wall.
Yeah.
And the doctors or nurses would put their hands through.
Wow.
Yeah, like a plastic, like, armhole.
Yeah.
And then do whatever they had to do. Through that,
yeah.
They would rarely come into the room.
Like, you're like bubble.
Yeah, it was like bubble.
You were the
boy
in bubble.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what my mom used to say.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long were you like that in isolation?
So I had my transplant on October 14th, which is another crazy date. It was my grandma's birthday that I had my transplant on. And she was the one that always, like, prayed for me, always told me that the church is, like, looking out for you, so that was just another...
I don't think that's a coincidence.
That's a chicken,
that's
a chicken skin.
Yeah.
There's no coincidence.
Yeah.
So I had my transplant on October 14th, and then I was discharged on November 20th. So a little over a month.
Yeah.
So right before Thanksgiving, I went home.
Yeah. That's crazy how you have all this memory of 13.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
There's a lot I can't remember, but like those few instances, like while I was in the hospital, like the bubble wall or like those things I remember.
Yeah.
And like not having any like internet.
Yeah. That, yeah, it would have been cool if you were able to record all that on your your cell phone back.
Yeah.
You were in a bubble.
Yeah.
I had to use... There is a picture of me somewhere. Like, you can see... I'm in the room, and then my friends came to visit, and they put their arm, one hand in, to, like, wave to me. You can... It's, like, in a photo.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's...
And so then you got home, and then... pretty much just had to go into recovery process.
Yeah, so when I got home, I had to go back still.
How long did it take you to engraft? Do you remember?
I want to say it was less than a month because it was before Christmas.
That's a pretty long time for engraftment because usually it takes, what, like a week or two? Like...
10 days now, about.
Yeah, I remember a nurse had to come over to our house like twice a week, and I had to like inject myself with I forgot what it was called, but it helped like boost everything, like my counts.
Like a Neupogen.
Yeah.
Injection.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it took me about a month, little under a month. So I remember I was able to go out Christmas Eve to a family gathering. Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Wow. So all within the year of 1999.
Yeah, between May and November.
And November.
Were
diagnosed, treatment,
mm-hmm.
and recovery.
Yep.
Incredible.
Yep. Yeah.
And all that was 19 years ago now.
19 years ago.
October 14th, your birthday.
Yep.
New birthday.
Yep. So I just turned 19. This past October.
That's right.
Yeah, we're going to party when he turns 20.
That's right.
No, we're going
21.
To Vegas. We're going
21.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
especially this lucky man. We're
yeah.
going
to
play.
I know, I need to take my mom with me.
Yeah.
Have her touch like every chip or every
yeah.
quarter that I put
yeah.
into the machine.
Totally.
That'd be so crazy if like we won.
Yeah. So your road sort of is a little different than Alex and mine. And I want you to explain, because you've had so much time post-transplant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From when you were sick at 13, and totally different experience as an adolescent. Your path to now and how you sort of come full circle, like, talk about growing up as a post-cancer survivor.
Yeah. So when I was younger, like, teens, early 20s, you know, I just wanted just to like live and have fun. I definitely had a much appreciation for everything.
Life.
Yeah. Good, bad, whatever it was. Like,
did you gain that at that age? Because I feel like I gained that after getting sick at, you know, 38.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was like immediately, but I want to say definitely like towards my later teens. Early 20s is when...
Did you go through a period where you almost just didn't want to talk about it anymore? Like, you didn't want to have... I'm curious. Did you ever go through a period where it was like, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
I don't want to have this follow me the rest of my
right.
life.
You just want to have a normal
You want to have a normal life because you missed
life,
you know, you had a chunk taken out of your adolescence. Or was it something that just sort of stuck with you?
I think it always stuck with me. I did want to just like live and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
But there was still that part of me that wanted to talk about my situation, my experience. I did a lot of speaking for A3M.
Uh-huh.
I was on like Japanese like news stations.
Yeah.
They were even going to fly me out to Japan with the director of A3M at the time to kind of encourage people from Japan to register because they needed more registries
uh-huh.
from Japan. So ever since, yeah, I was out of the hospital, I've been speaking a lot, especially with A3M
mm-hmm.
at some of their, a lot of their events.
Mm-hmm.
So it was something that I was still comfortable speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
During the hospital stay, though, I didn't want to talk about it.
Mm.
Whenever, like, the social worker came in, I was just like, oh, she's going to make me talk about how I feel, how things are going, and I just didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But afterwards, after everything was said and done, that, you know, I was going to be okay, then that's when I kind of opened up and was like, okay, like, I'm ready to talk about
mm-hmm.
my experience.
Mm-hmm.
I want to help others.
Was it a traumatic experience for you? Because I know for me, just going through the whole ordeal, it was, you know, I was an adult. I was able to talk myself out of it, but
mm-hmm.
it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fortunate that it happened to me at such a young age, and I didn't really know exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
I think that helped a lot, because if I was, say, like, your age when it happened, my whole mindset would have been totally different,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right, I thought about that, because at that age, you don't really focus
too
much on, because you don't really know.
Yeah, and, like, you would hear cancer here and there, like, 20 years ago, but nowadays, I think with, like, social media and, like, just everything, it's everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like, more support, there's, you know, great organizations. But back then I just didn't know anything, and not knowing, I think, helped me get through everything.
Yeah. I think it's awesome that you are able to open up and be open about it and talk about it. And some people just can't.
They just want to forget about it, or it's too
I was wondering if you went through a phase like that, because as an adult, I don't know if you have the luxury, like a kid,
mm-hmm.
not that it's a luxury to go through this as a kid, but as an adult, you don't necessarily have that time of recovery post illness, of any kind, where you do have a successful treatment and you recover and then you get a chance at just living normally.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if that affected you to the point where, you know, you spent time where it was like, you know what, I can't have this a part of my life right now,
mm-hmm.
but you knew you'd always come back to it. Or it does, just like you said, it just affected you and it was something you kind of knew you wanted to live your life. It certainly affected you in ways of living to the fullest you could,
because
you almost died. And but it never went to a place where you closed it off, it sounds like.
Yeah, I never shut it out. I've never been like, I don't want to think about it anymore or nothing like that. It's always
mm-hmm.
been a part of me. And like kind of what Alex said, it was a bittersweet experience. You know, it sucked going through it, obviously,
mm-hmm.
but you know what came out of it, I think, is a lot greater.
Mm-hmm.
And what it took from you.
Yeah, you know, like starting my own organization, helping the hundreds of patients and families that, you know, we've helped over the 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I would have never thought about doing anything like that if I hadn't gone through this.
Yeah, and explain that. Explain how you got to that foundation and what inspired you.
Yeah, so maybe towards my end of college years, I started thinking about giving back more to the cancer community, and I wanted to do something to show my or other cancer patients that, you know, there's other people out there that have gone through the same thing that, you know, can help you go through this time. So in 2013, I founded a nonprofit organization called My Wishlist Foundation, and we grant small wishes for these patients to use while they're being treated in the hospital. And these wishes are small, like video games, Legos, but they really have a big impact on their cancer treatment. You know, we go in and the social workers are like, you know, this patient hasn't said much or smiled in like months, so I don't know how much you're going to get out of them. I don't know if you'll get a picture with them or not, depending how they feel. And we walk in and they're smiling, they're talking about like their experience, how much it sucks, but, you know, they're just going through it. And then we walk out of the room, the social worker's like, oh my God, like, we've never seen that patient, like, smile or say anything to us, like, more than what
That's
he
amazing.
did.
That must be so rewarding.
Because, yeah, like, you know, like, we've gone through it.
And it is the little things sometimes.
Yeah.
It's the little things of comfort or joy or...
Yeah,
yeah,
just
it
like...
Just the little things, yeah.
The
kid stuff, too. I mean, since it's focused on adolescents.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's just, yeah, it's just the little stuff sometimes.
Yeah, just
that
the normalcy of being a kid.
Normalcy, yeah.
The normalcy of being a kid. So...
Yeah.
You know, whether... And we like to take their mind off of their treatment, obviously. So whether it's, you know, 5 minutes, 5 hours, 5 months, you know, we get to help this patient take their mind off of whatever they're going through.
That's awesome.
We've helped them, so.
So being the veteran in the group, in many ways.
Yeah, Uncle
Brandon.
Uncle B.
So you've already done something to pay it forward.
Mm-hmm.
So what has shifted in your life now? What has brought you to the point where you felt like this podcast was something you wanted, that inspired you, that you felt like, okay, I think there's a new need, or maybe you can fulfill something that wasn't there before? Talk about that in sort of how it shifted from, you know, your foundation's still going and it's amazing, but what is this podcast going to add to that for you?
It's filling like a void of reaching out to many more people, not just pediatric cancer patients, but adults, parents, caregivers, people who all been affected by cancer. It's just wanting to do more for them, letting them know that there's other people that have gone through what they're going through, or this,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
Just letting them know that they're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's people out there that might be going through the same things that we've gone through, that they just need to hear from us, that, you know, it sucks, but you just gotta be patient, like Alex said, and it's all gonna work out. But yeah, for me, it's filling that void of there's thousands of more people who we can reach out to and help,
mm-hmm.
not just the pediatric side.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like the void.
Love it.
Yeah, I remember when I first got diagnosed, what gave me the most hope and inspiration was just to talk to somebody who has survived.
Yeah,
yes.
Somebody who's gone through it.
That's
now on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was the, like, there was nobody else I could have talked to that would have made me feel better than speaking to that
right.
person that survived it.
Right.
Yeah, because in the hospitals, you know, they have the social workers.
Right.
But you almost don't want to talk to them because they're like, how do you know what I'm going through? Like,
right.
you could be saying these things, but you don't know
you
what I'm feeling. Yeah, you didn't go through it.
Yeah.
So
right.
how are you going to tell me, like, how to feel or what
right.
I should do when you haven't
right.
gone through it?
Right.
Yeah, I felt that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the unknown that's so scary and that everyone has a fear of, but... when you know someone has been through that,
mm-hmm.
it's a known.
The
it's
known.
A known
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
And it becomes a known, and you want,
it's
like you want to absorb everything that they know.
Yeah.
Just to give you some kind of comfort, because even though every patient is different,
yeah.
you know, it's just a level of, okay, this is somewhat what I can expect.
Yeah.
Or so-and-so got through this, or so-and-so they said they had this complication, but... you know,
mm-hmm.
applesauce helped.
Yeah.
Know,
it was
know?
It was my doctor that referred me to my family doctor that diagnosed me at first, that referred me to one of his patients that also had leukemia who was a survivor,
mm-hmm.
however many years, I'll forget now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was super, super healing. I would
yeah.
call, I never even met him
yeah.
until this day, but
Really?
My doctor gave me his number, and I remember I used to call him every night. Like, hey.
Yeah.
I think that's why, too, like, I didn't want to just forget about my situation, because going through it, like, I didn't meet anyone, any kids
who
have survived. The one kid that I did know had passed. He was, like, a good, I wouldn't say family friend, but he played basketball in the same organization that I did. So my parents knew each other. So I would see him in the hospital, but he ended up passing. But I never met any survivors. Like, no one in my family had cancer. None of
my
relatives. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I kept, you know, doing the speeches I did with A3M, to making the appearances, to advocate, to become a bone marrow donor.
Yeah.
Just because I didn't have, you know, that support
from
other peers.
Well, and kids are so intuitive and...
Mm-hmm.
Very close to, I don't know, what do you call it? I don't know, just the energy of the universe and all of that. I think children are very, you know, they're like sponges for that, and they can sense things. And as a kid, to not have a support of other survivors, that probably was that void that you felt.
I think that's what it was,
And that's why you continue to try and fill that.
Yeah, because there was no podcasting in 1990.
No,
definitely
well,
not.
Well, and 20 years ago, survival rate was not what it is now.
No,
yeah,
it wasn't.
You know, so to not have many people survive, you know, that is that's an actual physical void.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. We just psychoanalyzed you.
But it all makes sense. Yeah,
it does.
What you're doing now is it all makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you're healthy, you're doing well. Still
healthy,
going strong.
Well, you know.
Your mom's twin.
Yeah. I know. My mom. She during the transplant, she endured, I think, more pain than I did.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
A mother,
so I don't know if
a mother...
people know, but the way they take the bone marrow out is they go through the hip bone, because there's multiple angles where you can hit it.
Yes.
So they took bone marrow out of both her hip bones, and she was somewhat, not allergic, but she didn't react well to the anesthesia.
Oh.
So she was sore, plus she was like throwing up from the anesthesia.
Oh.
She had a reaction to
So here I was just sitting there watching TV as I get, you know, this bone marrow.
Yeah, she's going
just like a blood transfusion.
Shit.
I'm just sitting there.
Yeah.
And
she would have done it 100 times over and then some.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sure that wasn't the hardest part.
No.
No, yeah. I'm sure that was the easiest
part. That was the easiest
part
for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow, your story is just, I don't know, every time I hear it,
I know,
it's
mind-boggling to me,
is.
I think.
I do want to do a search to see if anyone else had a parent.
I'm telling you,
I just
feel like...
I even told my doctor couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I feel like that would just...
She was like,
really?
She was like, no way.
Wait, who's your doctor?
Dr. Buddy.
Dr. Buddy at
Elizabeth
City of
Buddy.
Hope.
Okay.
This Chinese lady.
What? For outpatient, what thing do you go to? Do you go 1C?
1B.
1B, okay, I'm 1C. So
you're on the other side.
Yeah.
I went to 1C a few times.
That's where my doctor is.
Yeah.
Which one was yours?
Dr. Parker. So I was sent there because he specialized in GVH.
Oh.
So I had GVH complications afterwards.
How long?
I want to say a couple years, because I had discoloration, like the skin, I was getting sores in my mouth.
Stomach issues?
I still have stomach issues. I had stomach 20 issues
20 years later.
Before and after, so I don't know if it was because
of that. Yeah.
So, but yeah, Dr. Parker,
yeah,
who just retired, so congratulations to him. Yeah. I haven't met my new doc yet. I haven't been checked up in a while. Which is good.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome.
Yeah. Man.
Cool.
I aspire to be like you, man. 19 years out.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're on your way, man.
And happy and
yeah.
healthy. And
4 years down.
You
yeah.
look fully healthy, man. Like,
yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of my friends and who I like recently met throughout the last like 10 years, like they didn't even know unless I said something.
Yeah.
Sure.
I just had no idea.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I feel
amazing.
Like after going through cancer and recovering from it, I feel healthier than people that didn't go through cancer, you know? I don't know. It's
yeah.
kind of weird. Like,
yeah. I feel healthier now.
Lifestyle changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lifestyle
changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't drink nearly as much.
Again, it's yeah. It's
well,
part of the
I can't
silver...
say that before. When I found out that when I could drink, I was like, what? It was my senior year, and like this basketball team that I was a part of, we went to Hawaii. It was like a graduation thing.
Uh-huh.
And my doctor was like, all right, try to stay out of the sun. And,
in Hawaii.
Yeah. And try not to drink a lot of alcohol.
You're and
like, I was like,
what?
You know I'm graduating high school, right? But then, yeah, they're like, just don't drink a lot of alcohol. I was like, I can drink? They're like, you know, in moderation. I'm like, all right. Game on.
That's funny.
That's pretty cool.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's perfect. That was good.